Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 267th edition of Money Matters, entitled April Showers and Flowers. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. These expressed in my opinions only do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, the staff members, or underwriters. Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks. Remember, this show is about money. As money doesn't matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. Yes, it is. How is everybody today? Well, let's take a look at the Dow, 24,873. And a month and a half ago, 26,616. And our weekly report on major resistance and support points, large numbers, 24,000, 25,000, 26,000. So those of you who listen to the show should tell me that 24,000 below us is a support level. That's right. Support level. 25,000 above us is a resistance level. Can we go through 25,000, or will we be prevented from falling through down 24,000? The large numbers are major resistance points, according to some analysts, and there are minor resistance points all through there. If you prescribe to the technical theory of chart reading and things of this sort, investor perception, right? Investor perception. And so, welcome. Yeah, we're into. Coming into April, well, not April yet, March 15, 2018, 12:14 Pacific Standard Time, noon, year of our Lord. And I'm live, but you could be hearing the show recorded. Aired at a later date, carried somewhere about 65 stations here and there. So I'm glad you've joined me today. So we'll see what the Dow does. NASDAQ's down. And the S&P 500 is up. Those numbers, Dow and NASDAQ, S&P and Russell, those are different market indexes. Just like supermarkets, you go to Raley's or you go to Safeway or you go to SPD or wherever you go. These are just different markets where different stocks are sold. So, there we go. I went up with a friend of mine, a business meeting. We went up to one of the casinos. It's funny, you know, he's a member. He's a gambling member. So they have, I think they have four tiers, but I saw three tiers. It was like Advantage, and another one was, you know, Premier, and another one was Luxury, or whatever it is. I always call them like this. The first level of gambling, where you throw a little bit of money in, maybe they give you a discount on your room, they send you a mailer. I call that crazy. And then the next level, which my friend was, he threw a lot of money at the tables, and he was in the second tier. I call that stupid. And then there's a third level. They throw a lot of money on it. I call that crazy stupid. So depending on what club you're on. I'm in the crazy level, the stupid level, the crazy stupid level. And then there's like, you know, the people that throw a lot of money at these things. A friend of mine works for a towel bar company, and he deals with the Chinese manufacturers. So he went over to China to talk to his suppliers. And they had him at somewhere in China, a big gambling casino, and he went there, and they had door prizes. Anyway, these guys were real heavy. My friend sat like way in the back at table number 300. But he had a bunch of people, a bunch of Chinese guys that were sitting up in the front, different nationalities were sitting in the front. And the door prizes were automobiles. You know, Rolls Royce, Porsche, you know, and he said, it was really funny. Everybody in the five front tables are the ones that won. You know, it's like, oh, I want a Porsche. Talk about skewed, right? Well, when you're throwing $1 million down on the poker tables, they're going to give you a new Toyota, right? What the heck? So, yeah, we're going to see what happens in the markets. We're watching it, so you don't have to. This is Money Matters, our website, Agrata. There's nothing for charged on the website. MoneyManagementRadio.com. It's our way of saying thank you to listen to your community radio station. Of course, each community radio station has their own website, which we would say consider going to and finding out how you can support your radio station, your local radio station, or volunteer or whatever. I'm sure they're glad to have your participation on all levels, whatever you'd like to do. Your community radio station, of course. A lot of them are your emergency broadcast systems. The snow gets bad, the weather gets bad, or you need information on the community around you. Radio is always a great source. It's instant. It's live. Well, at least a lot of the stations are live. Some are recorded. We are live 24 hours a day in the emergency broadcast system for a very large area. And so things happen. You know, we know about it, fires and things. We do fire reports and snow reports. And I think we used to do a ski report. We may still do a ski report. I'm not quite sure. I don't do the morning show anymore, so I don't know. So there you go. So we're going to keep an eye on it. Yeah, Dow's up 100. Typical political stuff floating around in the news, of course, you know. Drives the market neither here or there. And so we talked about these major resistance levels and support levels. And certain analysts and theorists, they look at these patterns, you know, like a graph. They just look at the graph of a price of an asset. Let's say oil or gold, or let's say a particular market. You know, Chinese market index, or let's say they look at a stock, right? Particular stock of an individual company. And analysts believe, some, that these chart patterns can tell a story as to what may lie ahead on a particular security or market they may be looking at. So they look at a price action of, a Chinese market, and they believe that when they see this certain pattern develop, that it'll tell them what's coming up next. Many theories and methods are then derived from these patterns that try and predict where the price of this particular underlying security may go. The various theories are usually named, and some are widely followed and believed, and some are not. This analyst, me, I do take the charting theories with a grain of salt, but I do believe many of these charting theories at least have some sort of merit that I might find useful. One chart theory I find useful is a pattern commonly known as a climax pattern. Climax pattern. This pattern has two indicators, at least for me, and they may help indicate to me potential bottoms and tops of price movements in stocks and index and whatever the pattern I'm looking at. Stocks refer to individual companies, you know, like an Apple or an IBM or General Motors or whatever company you're looking at, individual companies. And indexes refer to the various markets like the Dow and the NASDAQ or maybe other investment vehicles that hold a multitude of stocks or bonds or other security. Now, none of these indexes can be invested in directly. But there are proxy things that you can buy. The point here is the climax pattern can apply to an individual security or group of securities or bonds or what have you. The climax pattern, if you believe it, although there are no foolproof prognosticators of market direction, the climax pattern, for me, has two uses. And they can be illustrated by the names, climax top and a climax bottom. I didn't make those names up. They are widely used. The climax top is supposed to indicate when a stock may be topping out, right? It indicates when a stock maybe has run up, you know, consistently over a period of time. Climax top indicates that it may be ready to change direction to the downside. There's also something called a climax bottom, which is supposed to indicate, note the words supposed to, when a security or index is falling and falling and falling and then perhaps bottoming out and ready to change direction to the upside. So a climax top indicates may indicate that the stock is ready to turn down, or the index or whatever you're looking at, the price of oil or whatever. And a climax bottom indicates when it may be time for that the thing will start jerking upwards. The climax theory goes like this. Suppose a stock or a market has a sustained rally upwards, right? Keeps bouncing around, but the general trend is up. An investor wants to know when to get while the getting is good and to sell out before the stock falls back down. In other words, when might the rally be exhausted or exhausting itself and the time is near to take some profits before a possible price fall takes all your profit back? The climax part of the moniker, the climax name, comes from the fact if the price action is mostly one direction, okay, but then exhibits wild swings with significant ups and downs of a high percentage compared to its usual degree of price swings, it might be indicating a climax pattern. In other words, let's say a stock index climbs from 20 to 40, and its usual movements are 50 cents or a buck or a buck and a half. But generally, it grinds upward with little bounces of a buck and a half, until such a time where you start seeing the index of the stock start to bounce wildly or bounce more than its usual movement. So if a stock generally moves 50 cents to a buck a day or over a couple of days, then it starts moving $3 or $4. But it's not generally up or down, it's just bouncing. Violent bounces, right? Boom, 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 boom. The summary of this price action is to be said that it is experiencing wider than normal bounces, wider than normal highs, and wider than normal lows over a short period of time, but is generally stalling out while starting to bounce wildly. So it stopped its direction up or down, as you may, as the case may be, and then it starts bouncing a lot, but it bounces rather violently. Boing, boing, up, down, you know, in a wider degree of price movement than what you normally saw on its way down or back on its way back up. The same holds true in either the climax top or the climax bottom. If the extended price action over the general period of time has been up, and it starts bouncing wildly but stops going up over time, it's just bouncing, that could indicate a climax top is about to take place or is taking place. If the direction has been an extended erosion in price, right? It's falling and falling and maybe up and then falling more and then up and then maybe falling more. So if it's had an extended erosion in price, its price would stop falling in general and start bouncing wildly. Boing, 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 boing. But generally its direction is now just stalling out. This price action might be viewed as a climax bottom, indicating the fall might be coming to an end. We don't have to look far for an example of a possible climatic event. On February 9th of this year, the Dow had experienced several days of heart-stopping actions, falling from a high of 26,616, which I had mentioned earlier, which was the high. And it had been there, and then it started to fall, and it fell for a few weeks, and it culminated one particular week with a 1,300-point decline, okay? That particular Friday, Fridays are significant. People look at Fridays as more significant as other trading days, those that believe that Friday is more significant. That Friday, the Dow had been down. It started down, and it was down as much as 500 points early on in the day. And it bounced really high. It was up 500 points the same day, but it closed with a 300-point gain. This wild intraday swing of nearly 1,000 points in total gave an excellent example of what climax believers are looking for. The Dow had stopped, for the most part, its traumatic fall. It looked like it was going to continue to fall, but it ended 500. It started 500 down, then it bounced up 500, so that's a 1,000-point swing. And the Dow ended up 300. So it had a wild, wild swing that day. And the Dow movement closing up 300 on a Friday may have substantiated the climax theory. Because in the following days, the direction of the Dow was mostly then up. was that wild day on Wall Street, 1,000-point swing, 1,500, 1,000-point swing, ending up 300, was that a climax bottom? Well, it certainly appears so in hindsight. A lot of times you can see these things in hindsight and say, oh, yeah, that was a climax bottom. So it is something to look for. It's another tool. There are many tools that you can use to evaluate stocks. This is one that I might look. Keep in mind, no one can predict market direction with 100% certainty. But depending on what theories an analyst might give weight to, or at least look at, it might give an indication, at least to that particular analyst or investor, to invest accordingly into what he believes. The slew of chart theories are almost endless. There are many, many names for these things. Double bottom, double top, triple bottom, triple top, head and shoulders bottom, head and shoulders top. There's a lot of them. And they're almost endless in their monikers. And it's up to each investor to determine whether a particular chart pattern works for you. Now, most of the time, people that are looking at charts, fairly sophisticated educations, and fairly sophisticated, at least educations, not as far as degrees are concerned, but have been watching these things for a long time. As I mentioned before, keep in mind it's not possible to invest in an index directly. And, of course, as always, this is not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. Okay, so climax tops and climax bottoms. You're listening to Money Matters. This is show 267 of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabrudi, and it's called April Showers and Flowers. And we'll be right back to continue the show. Then, how's everybody today? Glad to see you, glad to see you, glad to see you. And you're listening to show 267 edition Money Matters, April Showers and Flowers. Hello, 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 hello. Okay, so thank you for joining me. And, you know, I've done shows, you know, to talk to local motivational speaker Machen McDonald. Him and I were talking yesterday. We're thinking of giving maybe a seminar on running a small business, and it had me resurrect my ideas of running a small business. And so I penned another article. I've written a lot of articles on running a small business and running a restaurant. I used to teach classes on how to run a small business. Not how to run a restaurant. I've never run a restaurant, but I did write an article on all the things that bugged me on a restaurant. So I penned another one. I thought it'd be good to, you know, to kind of maybe, we haven't decided on the seminar, but we may be doing that. And so I wanted to at least preface and talk about running a small business. I run a small business since 1995. and I actually run two small businesses now. And so done it for a long time, been successful at it, and so taught classes on it, gone to a lot of classes myself when I was young on how to run a small business. Some of it's common sense, but it's amazing to me some small businesses don't have common sense. And Machen was telling me that he was saying, yeah, a lot of people think they're good at something, which they are. And then they, you know, apply that I'm good at something and open up a business. So a guy might be a great computer programmer or a great seamstress or whatever they do when they open a small business, but they don't know how to run a small business. So they could have a good product or service. They just don't run the business well. And that's important. You know, there's two facets to a business. One is good product and service, and two, run the business. Because you can have a good product and service and still lose money, right? Charge too much, charge too little, run the business terribly. So it's two facets of that. So when you've got a good product or service or good idea, you've got one of the two. But you need the other. One without the other means failure. One without the other. You could have a good business head but not a good product and service, or a good product and service and not a good business head, and both will drive you into the four vacant sign. So this is also applicable to if you have a small business and you want to run it better. So, and running a small business is not a task that everyone is suited for. Some people just shouldn't be running businesses, you know, and they should be working for somebody. But a lot of people try. Many more people think they can run a business than can actually run a business. This reality is, this fact is attested to the fact that 9 out of 10 new businesses fail within 3 years. I personally think that 9 out of 10 businesses don't even last 3 years. But sometimes new business opens up in town, and I go in and I'm thinking, there's no way this guy's going to survive. No way. And usually if I see that, they don't. You know, one of the things I haven't included in this presentation today is that, you know, one of the things a business should not do is a business should not be moving. You should not be moving your new business, because people get used to where you are. And I don't know about you, but when I see a business and I see a sign that says we have moved to blank, 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 I never go to the new address. I just don't, unless I really like the business. I just don't. I just like, nope. You know, that's nice that they move, but usually for me, I get the flavor if somebody's moved, they're in trouble. But a lot of people move because they're expanding, and so, okay. But for me, if it's a small business and I've never been in there, I've been in there once, and I see that they've moved, they usually move to a less expensive pad, right? An expensive rental. So keeping in mind that 9 out of 10 new businesses fail within 3 years, I personally think it's less than that. We can pretty much assume that the pitfalls are many, and they are. And frankly, I'm astounded to how many business owners not only fall way short of keeping good track of what's happening money-wise, right? They just don't track what they're doing money-wise, but fail on the basics. You know, the basics. And the basic might be being a nice person behind the counter. Or returning phone calls, right? Or putting thought into whatever it is you're selling and how you're going to sell it. Because so many business owners fall short of being on the right side of the bell curve. Now, I assume that most of you know what a bell curve is. A bell curve looks like a bell sitting on a desk. And it's, you know, a bump, right? And the left side of the bump doesn't have much bump in it. It's where the lip of the bell is. And the left side is generally regarded as bad as you can get. And the right side, the far right side, is also where the other lip is, and that's as good as you can get. Now, for instance, if you run a restaurant and the food is absolutely terrible, terrible. I've been to a few, not many, but were actually just horrendous. That would be on the left side of the curve. Or you go to a restaurant. You know, I've always said a good restaurant would be something where I taste it And you taste it, and everybody tastes it and goes, wow, holy mackerel, how did they do that? I don't run into a lot of restaurants like that. Some dishes are good, some dishes are bad. And sometimes the dishes are overly fancy, but they're not good. So in other words, you go to a restaurant that tries to be fancy, and they have white tablecloth. And their prices are commensurate with their trying to be fancy. And they say, we have, chicken with you know, basil leek and beet cream sauce and sprinkled with shallots and onions. And you taste it and you think, well, it tastes like steak or whatever I just said, I don't remember, memory's bad, with beet sauce and shallots and onions. I mean, it has wild taste to it, but is it good? Now, a lot of people in Leeson restaurants, they fall short of, they taste something and they think it's sophisticated, so they think, they see all the wild ingredients, and they think, oh, this must be good. It must be good because it looks complicated. And complicated does not necessarily mean good. So when I see restaurants says, hey, we've got, salmon with crusted almonds and butter sauce with shallots and all that, I taste it and I say, yeah, that tastes like salmon with butter sauce and shallots. It's not like, wow. So for me, when I go to a restaurant, I taste something and it's like, holy mackerel, that is really good. And everybody at the table tastes it and goes, wow, that's a good restaurant. So anyway, I didn't mean to veer off on a derivative of what good restaurant is. So covering all aspects of this bell curve, right? To the right is very few businesses are out there that are extremely good. To the left, fortunately, very few businesses are that bad. And most businesses are in the middle of the bell curve. That's why the bell is there, because the average spikes the numbers, so it looks like a bell, right? Average temperatures, average tree height, it's a bell curve. There are trees that grow short and trees that grow really tall, but there's a bell curve. The average is the mean, median. There's different ways to measure where the middle of the curve is, but the middle curve is the average of all the restaurants or all the businesses put together. So, being the best you can mean that you're out far on the right curve, and being inept means you're far left of the curve, and obviously you want your business to be as far right on the curve as possible, right? It's hard to be way out there. There are not many that are. That's why the curve looks like it does. When I see my competitors not running a business well, sometimes I'm like, oh, what is he doing? He's not, and instead of getting mad or judgmental, I think, that's good. I will celebrate the deficiencies of my competitors because their shortfall means that I, if I do things half right, will move to the right of them on the curve. So if they're terrible and I'm better, I'm to the right of them. So I'm better than they are. So I celebrate when somebody, at least in my couple of businesses, are not doing things well because it means that I look better. Covering all aspects of running a small business really can take hours, if not days. It's voluminous, if that's the right word. So due to the lack of time, I'm going to cover the basics of business, okay? These basics apply to almost any business. They're not industry specific. These are just basic, what you should do, whatever you're selling, whatever you're doing, and you're trying to market to the public. Whatever it is, from apple cart to zookeeper, as I say, these are applicable. Okay. One, return your phone calls. Return your phone calls. Or you soon won't have any phone calls to return. This one seems to be a no-brainer, but in actuality, there's a lot of people that just don't get it. I mean, I seriously have called businesses, they don't call me back, or they take 2 days to call me back. So there is a bell curve there is a graph on how fast you return your calls versus how many sales you get. If you return your phone calls fast, you're going to get more business than if you return your phone calls slowly. It may not be proportional, but the guy who calls you right back is going to get more business than the guy who calls you 3 days later. Right? It's not a direct proportional correlation. There's no way to prove that. But trust me, faster phone calls means more business. And slower phone calls mean less business. That's the fact of it all. Second, be nice. This also baffles me on occasion. You know, people buy from who they like, especially if you're in outside sales. They buy from who they like. You know, when people will tell me, I have an advisor, he's a nice guy. Well, of course he's a nice guy. If he was a bleep, you wouldn't do business with him. So I always say, I know you have an advisor, but he's a nice guy. I know he's a nice guy. Of course he's a nice guy. But you wouldn't do business with him, right? So be nice. I can never understand when I drop in or call on a new business proprietor, right? Or drop in, hey, how you doing? They have the personality of a south end of a northbound moose. Figure that one. Think about that one. South end of a northbound moose. People buy from who they like. Be likable. I've gone to some places that they're just arrogant. It's like they're doing me a favor to wait on me. It's like, what? Some car dealers are like that. You kind of, you know, they're like, well, I don't have time. You're going to come down and buy or not? It's like, what? Problems. You're going to have problems, issues, warranties, complaints. You're going to have those, okay? Problems and complaints are actually a blessing. They are an absolute blessing because problems, any business can take your money. Anybody, you walk in the store, I want to buy it, they're going to take your money anytime. But if you have a problem, I've had, you know, I went to a store in Nevada City. I've been there every year for Valentine's Day. It's a little boutique that I used to go to. I've been there every year for like 10 years, and one day I go in and I bought a shirt for the wife and I brought it back and it didn't fit. And I said, doesn't fit. I don't want to see anything in the store that I want to buy right now. I need to get my money back. Oh, we won't give you your money back. It's credit only. I said, hey, nicely. I said, well, I buy here all the time. No, that's standard store policy. Credit only. And I was like, wow, really? So I had this $40 credit, so I spent it in the store, and I never returned. And that was like 6 years ago. Never come back. I know what your policy is, but you got a good customer, okay? Solve the problem to their satisfaction, not yours. The customer is indeed always right. I know they're not always right. I know they're not always right. But you have to treat them like that if you want him to remain your customer. Like I said, any business can take your money. But if you make a problem right in the customer's mind, you've won a customer for life. Because what do they say? You know, I went to the store, I had a problem, and he made it right. Now they know. If they have another problem, you do the same thing. You made it right. And you say, I'm going back. That guy had a problem. He sold me something that broke, and he fixed it, or he gave me money back, or gave me another. One of the reasons you keep that customer is obvious. The other reason is an unhappy customer has a big mouth. An unhappy customer has a big mouth, and they will use it if you don't make them happy. Word of mouth, and you can say that especially in the restaurant business, word of mouth cuts both ways. And now with social media, my gosh, you do something wrong, man, you're going to be plastered on social media. Word of mouth cuts both ways. Make sure it cuts the other guy and not you. Fix a problem to the customer satisfaction, even if it costs you the profit and then some. Fix it. Offer a good product or service at a good price. This is not a no-brainer. You think this is a no-brainer, but this is not. This is far from a no-brainer. This is a tough one. It's called price point. Price point. In taxation, we call it the Laffer curve, but this is price point. Finding the right price for your product is determined by the marketplace, not you. You don't determine the price. You do initially, but the marketplace will determine the final price that you should charge. You will find out if your price is reasonable and your product is good by the amount of votes you get. Votes are dollars. People like your product, they vote, and they hand you a vote, and that's a buck. If you aren't making votes, if customers aren't handing you dollars, the market is telling you that you've done something wrong in either price or quality, or it's not needed. A lot of people think they have a great idea, but they don't sell anything. I have a great idea. Well, it may be a great idea, but it may not be a great business idea, because if it's not a good idea and people aren't buying it, it's not a good idea. Either that or your price point is wrong. I make a shawl. and I make it for $35. And that's what I'm selling it for. Because it's worth that. And I'm not selling it any lower. That's stubbornness. You may sell it for 20 and make more profit by selling more shawls than staying stubborn at 35. Or you may sell so many, you could raise the price, work less by making less shawls and make more money. So where you price it is very important. And you can alter that price as you see price and demand. You can see your demand. Don't be stubborn and shut your ears and eyes to what the public, the voting public is telling you. If they're not throwing dollars in your direction, you have to make a change. Quality or price point. I once sat in a board of directors meeting at a local Little League board I was on. And we were debating whether to charge, I don't remember the price, between $2.30 and $2.35. They were bucking, we were bucking an hour over whether to charge a difference in $5. And I said, you guys are setting this arbitrary. We have no idea what the price point is. We don't know if $2.30 or $2.35 is going to sell more or less. This is arbitrary. Why are we arguing about it for 2 hours? It's just more people have opinions at $2.30 than $2.35. But we didn't even try to discover price point. They just said, I could have heard of you. You know what you're talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay. So price point. What's the optimum price for you to make the most money? Don't overexpand. And expand only into strength, not weakness. This is an important one. Start small. I know a lot of people start a business. They get a big store. They buy a new car. They get new signs. They stock the heck out of the store and nothing. Start small. The smaller the better. Large stores don't mean large sales necessarily. Large stores mean large expenses. That's a fact. Way too many businesses spend way too much money on startup. Way too much money on startup. If you've got a good product, you don't need a big store. And if you've got a big store, that doesn't mean you have a good product. Start as small as you can. As far as expanding, sales should drive expansion, not expansion drive sales. So, for instance, if you are selling a lot and you can't keep the customers from knocking on your door and you can't get enough inventory, that means your sales are requiring you to expand. I have to get bigger to service the demand. Versus I have a small store, I'm not selling much, so I'm going to expand. That's expanding into weakness. You never expand into weakness. You only expand into strength. Sales should drive expansion, not expansion should drive the need to make more sales. More often than not, the reason businesses fail, and the number one reason is cash flow. Cash flow. Don't have enough cash coming in for the cash going out. At the right time you need it, or just enough. Cash flow problems arise from too much monthly overhead initiated by overzealous proprietors whose startup plans exceed their pocketbooks. Simple as that. Another common pitfall along these lines is expanding to increase sales. Like we said, you expand thinking that a bigger store is going to sell more. Expanding too soon before sales make you absolutely require that you expand, or expanding into an inflationary environment. Now, that one, it takes a whole store, a whole show on its own. Expanding into an inflationary environment, I can't do that as a side note. I've got to do a whole show on that, and I will. That's called malinvestment. We can talk about that. That's a great topic. But the first two mean an overabundance of sales should be the only reason to expand. You don't expand to sell more in the face of weak sales. Sales should drive expansion versus the mistake of expanding, which then necessitate more sales to pay for it. And don't expand into areas. To build on strength also means some people will, you know, they like, for instance, they'll sell stuff that's not related. They'll open up a coffee shop and they're not selling enough, so they'll add clothing. Now, that can work on occasion because, one, the clothing that you added may be the business that's the better business, and it's feeding the bad business. But it can help, but I don't necessarily ever recommend that. If you open a coffee house, it should be selling coffee and related products, not something totally unrelated. You see they'll hang jewelry, and then they'll hang this and they'll that, and you'll go in there and you say, well, is this a coffee house? Is this a jewelry store? What is this? I've seen a lot of businesses, they have this and they have that. They sell this, they sell that, they sell a, you know, business coach, and then they're also selling jewelry, and they're selling food, and then they're offering, you know, taxi service. It's just, you got all these unrelated businesses, and say, what are you doing? There are many reasons and methods for success and failure in running a small business, and these are only a few. But there are a variety of educational resources available on the web on how to run a small business, and I recommend if you're running one, even read those. Or if you're thinking of starting one, read those. It's best to spend more time planning. You know, this is also in relationships. Patience never hurt anybody, right? Rushing into things always has, or almost always has. Only proceed when your business is detailed in ink and in every way conceivable. Every problem you could have, everything you're going to sell, how much it's going to cost you, what you have to sell, those all should be laid out for sure. Running a small business right here on Money Matters. We'll be right back to end the show, right? I mean, that's what we should do. I guess so. I hate to. I always like doing this show so much. We'll be right back. Listening to Money Matters, show 267. My name is Mark. All shows are available on moneymanagerator.com. There's no charge for the website. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed here are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, or underwriters. My name is Mark. God bless. Thanks for joining me today. And stay safe, okay? Love you guys. See you in a while.